You have to show that you are good all the season, not only one day. The first 2 months is perfect. Sometimes I remember too many players that came and the first 2 months were amazing. And in the important moments when there are problems, they disappear. And this is something that I don't want to do. In the bad moments, I got to be there. I got to be the first one. And this is the way I think that you have to lead something. Not too many words, but showing with your attitude that you are going to be there, ready to help my teammates in the moment that they need to be helped.
Hi, I'm Dan Krikorian.
And I'm Patrick Carney.
And welcome to Slapping Glass, exploring basketball's best ideas, strategies, and coaches from around the world.
Today, we're excited to welcome Real Madrid head coach, Chus Mateo. Coach Mateo is here today to discuss the major adjustment of switching to a 2-3 zone in the EuroLeague playoffs, helping lead Real Madrid to the eventual title. And we talk player buy-in, and beating drop coverage during the always fun start, sub, or sit. Costa Rica, Spain, Italy, Australia, South Africa. We're excited to announce our newest partnership with the world leader in international sport tours, Beyond Sports. Founder and former college and pro basketball coach, Josh Erickson, and his team of former athletes have built the go-to company for coaches looking to take their programs abroad. From the travel and accommodations to excursions and service learning opportunities, Beyond Sports does it all. For more information and to learn why more than 650 universities have trusted Beyond Sports, visit beyondsportstours.com and tell them Slapping Glass sent you. And now, please enjoy our conversation with Coach Chus Mateo. Coach, thank you so much for making the time for us today. Congratulations on a great season last season. I know you're looking ahead to this one already, but we appreciate you coming on and are excited to talk to you today.
Nice to meet you too, and thank you very much. It's a blessing for me to be with you. Thank you so much for calling me.
Appreciate that. Coach, we'd like to start with this. And basically a conversation about adjusting as a coach game to game within a season. And you guys famously now switched to running a lot of zone, specifically in the playoffs and then leading you guys to the EuroLeague championship. And it's something that you went to when you were down 0-2 in your series against Partizan. And just all that went into that decision, why you went to it, why it was successful, you and your staff feeling comfortable and your team feeling comfortable to switch to something in those big games. And so we wanted to just start with that and your thoughts on adjusting as a coach, specifically to that zone.
This is a good question, because at the beginning of the season in the EuroLeague, we never thought that we are going to use a 2-3 zone to finish the EuroLeague being champions. At the beginning of the season, we start with our mind only thinking that we have to go game by game, adding victories to be between the first four places that make us to play with a court advantage. And we even didn't talk too much about zone. We got some alternative defense. It was not a 2-3 zone. 2-3 zone was an option that suddenly appeared when the 0-2 came against us after having the court advantage. We even practiced some other zones during the year. I think that the most important thing for a coach and for a staff is to understand that there's nothing predictable and you got to be ready to react. This was what happened in this moment. We were losing 0-2 and we got out. In the second game, we don't have Tavares. That for us was very important. He was injury. And even Poirier came from a surgery. He was out for a long time, more than 1 month. And then he made an effort to play in the second game, but he was not in the best conditions. And in the third game, he got another injury and he went out of the playoff. We had this fight at the end of the second game that made us to have some other players out, like Deck and Abusele went out of the roster. We start to think what we have to do something in which we can survive from this critical situation. And we start to think that the most probably is to do something that can protect our unique five, that was Tabárez in the court, and protect because everybody's going to attack him with the pick and roll, everybody's going to attack him in the one-on-one. And probably the only situation that can be protected was this zone that keep him in the middle, because we never allowed him to go out to the corners. We keep him in the middle, and everybody, all the traffic of the offense of the other team went towards him in a place where he can be safe of fouls. It's not two big guys that can't pop against him and can attack him from outside. So this was what we thought in this moment, and watching how it is going, all the playoff, we thought that it was a good idea, because only we have two fours. We have Yabusel out, and we need to use Ngabi Dek, that was injured in the third game, and Hesonya, we use him as a four. So we need to keep these two players more than 30 minutes in the court in this playoff. And this was the main idea, to start to run this 2-3 zone. But there were some other situations that were good to think that this is going to be a good idea. Firstly, that we were losing 0-2 and we have to do something different, of course. And we got to make the opponents to think something different, to attack Tabárez. That for us was very important in this moment, because if Tabárez goes out, we don't have any other big guy to supply him. And we decide to protect him with this zone. But we were watching that we need Chacho Rodríguez and we need Sergi Jul. And we need Rudy Fernández to close the games, because they can't play too many minutes, but they know how to finish the games. This was another good idea. I think that was good because the result was good, to keep them on the court. Chacho, Sergi, and Rudy were very important for us because they know how to run the zone. They don't have to play man-to-man or defend man-to-man against opponents that can attack them too. And this was the option to protect all of them. And we decide to alternate this man-to-man and zone in order more to protect Tabárez and Hesonya as big guys, as our own unique big guys, and to Chacho, Sergi, and Rudy allowed to reach the end of the game without fouls. And this was good, because at the end, this alternative defense, man-to-man and zone, make that the opponents stops a little bit and start to hesitate how to attack zone. It was not so easy for them, the surprise in this moment, and probably they start to hesitate a little bit. But it was more than to protect them, because we think that they are going to find solutions against zone for sure in the games that they play. It was more in order to protect us of the Tabárez fouls that can make us to be struggling in the most important moment of the season. This works very good. Players understood very well how to run this 2-3 zone. We use it full court sometimes after free throw. We use it half court, sometimes not with a strictly criteria to do it on the side out of bound, on the baseline out of bound, on the half court after timeout. We did some many different calls, and this was good because we made it a little bit unpredictable, this zone.
Coach, maybe before we get into the details of the zone, I'd like to just hit on the point you mentioned that it can breed hesitancy in your opponent. With the success you guys had this season, and even if you look at the NBA with the success Miami had, what is it about a zone that just stymies opponents across all levels in college and EuroLeague, NBA, and high levels?
I didn't think that this can work so good during the playoff and in the Final Four and even in the final. To be honest, it was a surprise for me too. But we need to use something, because we were losing 0-2. We need to change something. And probably we are not so used to think that our opponents at this level are going to run a zone. And probably where we spend as coaches a lot of time to attack against man-to-man, not so many against zone. And probably this is something that makes the opponents to stop a little bit on the offense. In our zone, if you want to talk about some details, we decided to defend the pick and roll, send them to the side. We didn't allow the middle. We send them to the side because this way we can use Tabárez as a stopper in the middle, and we didn't allow to take the pick and roll. If it's too high, the pick and roll was too high, we decided to go under, because we think that sometimes in my opinion, there are not so many teams that are able to shoot at the very beginning a three-pointer going out of the system and taking this decision against zone, because probably the coaches used to tell them, hey, let's move a little bit of ball and we will find an open shot a little bit later. And there are not so many players that are able to do it. And we accept this first shot because if it's too far, we decide to go under. But most of the pick and roll we defend, sending to the side and sending towards Tavares. Once the players went with the dribbling against Tavares, we decided to spread up with the outside players against the opponents. And even sometimes when we see that the possession is counting down and there are not so many seconds on the shot clock, we decided to turn it into man-to-man. We decide not to follow the cuts to the strong side. We decided to bump. We decided to move. We decided to make the ones hesitate a little bit because sometimes it seems like it's an open shot, but the defender is coming towards me. And this reaction of the defender made you to hesitate a little bit. And we saw in the faces that it was working. And it was good because we didn't lose too many rebounds against zone. We keep Tavares in the middle. Hesonia made a great ending of the season with rebounds too. And it was good because, of course, if in a 2-3 first offense, they score a three-pointer, probably the confidence go down and we have to decide to retire this defense. But it was not the case. And we start to get confidence with the defense. And even the opponents start to retreat a little bit. And I saw in their faces that it was not so easy to attack against this alternative defense. I saw that they are hesitating. I saw that they're not only Partizan, Barcelona too, and Olympiacos too. And I saw that it's not so easy to understand that now we have to play against man-to-man, now we have to play against zone, but they are allowing me to shoot, but not in this case, but not in this other case. We have to go to fill the corners, but the defender is coming. He was up and 45 degrees, and now they are coming because they are bumping good. I think that it was good for us to understand. This defense made us to have some confidence, knowing that we are going to play the semifinals and the final.
You talked about having confidence in the game when you saw that the opponents were struggling against it. How about in practice, when you were putting the 2-3 in and you were discussing with your team and your staff, this is what we're going to do? What was the confidence level like? Did they believe it right away? Or was it something that you had to work through as a staff and a team before you got to the floor too?
Of course, we have to fix too many things from one game to the other. But at the beginning, when we start to think that this can work, I tell my staff and we as a staff tell the players that this can work. We make them to believe on that, but they believe from the beginning. Because for me, with this team, it was easier to make them believe in a 2-3 zone than in a full court press. In this moment, without only one big guy or one foreman, and these three veterans that we talked about them before, Sergi Chacho and Rudy. And it was easier for me to make them believe in something like this than not in another different defense that needs more energy and not so many attention like this 2-3. They know how to run it. They run it in the past too many times. They know the mechanism of this defense. So for me, it was very, very easy to convince them that this is going to be good.
Unique, an absolute must. The most helpful and highest quality coaching content anywhere. These are some of the comments coaches are using to describe their experience with SG Plus. From NBA and NCAA championship coaching staffs to all levels of international and high school basketball, SG Plus is designed to help curious coaches discover, explore, and understand the what, why, and hows of what the best in the world are doing. Through our searchable 650-plus video archive on SGTV, 100-plus deep-dive newsletters, coaching roundtables, private community app, and most recently, our in-person Las Vegas Summer League Coaches Social, SG Plus aims to connect coaches to helpful people and information, one drop coverage foot angle breakdown at a time. For more information and find out more about staff rates, visit slappingglass.com or email us at info@slappingglass.com today.
Sticking on practice and preparing this zone, when you were putting it in, What was the biggest concern? You mentioned ball screens. Was it short corner? Was it high post? I guess, what were you as a staff most worried about in terms of, we had to find solutions or find rotations and talk with the guys on these certain types of actions?
I was concerned about too many things. The corners, I was concerned about the pick and roll defense. I was concerned on the high post. I was concerned on the rebound, everything. And make me to hesitate if this is going to be good. But once we start to do it and we start to solve too many different situations, start to give me confidence that we are going to run it good. We start to explain the zone with, we used to keep the two men and the three men in the same side and the one man and the four men in the same side too. And most of the times the players start to understand that they got to start in this situation. I have to bump right here. I have to run to the corner in this moment. I have to call that someone is running to the opposite corner. It was easy for them to understand their job. And once we start to run it, because we didn't during the season, and we start to run it from this moment, it was good because we never thought that we are going to use a two-drill zone in EuroLeague to win the championship. And we start to fix it after the games and in the walkthrough, because we don't have too many practices from this moment till the final. The moment in which we start to use it till the final, we didn't practice too much. We talked too much about it. We saw too many videos and we talk more than practice. No time to practice. We got too many ACB leagues in the middle and we got too many travels in the middle. And we have to react immediately. We don't have time. We need to talk too much. Of course, we need to fix too many situations. We have to pay attention because there is no other option to practice. There's only the games, only the video, only to talk to them too many times individually. And the players are amazing how they understand this, because it was not easy for them to understand it. A few seconds left and a shot clock, we can turn it into man-to-man. And once we are in this situation, Tavares maybe can be matched up with a small guy and Chacho Rodriguez with five. So this situation, we have to be ready to box out. And it was good because one of my main concerns was that all the opponents got a lot of good players that can go to the offensive rebound. And maybe they are not going to score with the zone, but they are going to score with the offensive rebound. And this is bad for the confidence.
You mentioned a couple of times the bumps, and then also that you wanted to keep Tavares in the key. If there were situations where, let's say, the ball was swung or skipped to a two side, a 45 and a corner, and that low man was going to have to bump out or pick up the ball in the 45.
Yeah, especially after the second game, that Partizan works very good using three different offense. If I remember, three different offense with back screens and some flares or back screens to the man that is in the corner to avoid that he goes. And we start to talk about this, and we start to talk about the bumps. Not every time we can use the bumps, because of course the ball moves very quick. We can bump. And if it's at the end of the possession, we decided to cross from the man that was on a point. But this is not something that happened too many times. We decided to practice. We decided to talk about what will happen if I can bump and there are too many shooters that we can leave, and someone is coming from the other side and we don't want to follow the cut, and he fills the corner, and we decided sometimes to cross to the corner. But this didn't happen too much in the games. In the games, it was more difficult for us to prevent this shot from the corner when there were some back screens, the man who was on the second line, because this make us to go with the five if he get caught on a pick. If this guy get caught on a pick, we decide we have to go. But it was the moment to see in the video that they punish with some shots with the back screens, and Rudy was perfect in the situation because he knows how to prevent, and he was over the man who is setting the pick. There were some other players that are not so veterans. They don't recognize so good the situations that got to watch the video. We have to work on the video to prevent these situations that punish us a lot from the corners. It was so good to understand that a playoff at this level can change from one game to the other. And we can fix, even in the same kind of defense, we can fix too many aspects of this. It was good to understand that without too many practices and the video, we can fix it. That for me was amazing ending of the season, of course, as a coach.
earlier you mentioned that your three veteran guards, that they just knew how to win in late game. They knew what it took to win at the end of games and that you wanted to save them to be able to play more minutes down the stretch. And I wonder what it is that they do specifically that impacts winning later in the game that veterans know how to do.
During the season, of course, we got too many up and downs, and we know how to finish the game with them, with these three guys at the end of the game. But if they play at the beginning of the game, they are going to be with fouls, they are going to be tired, they need to be alive, and especially Chacho, too many moments of the third, the fifth game against Partizan, and the final. He was amazing how he played. He was amazing because he was magic in too many moments, delivering assistance and making us to relieve. And it was great to know how to make us to play, especially because he was fresh. But Sergi Jul and Rudy Fernandez made us to keep competing as we want, pushing the players, pushing the coaches to keep fighting until the end, and make us, and all of these three guys, make us to believe until the end. So the only way to make them, I got so many good players that the most important thing is to make them that they are useful for the team. And we were able to understand that there are some players that are going to start the game and they are going to do their job. And there are some other players that are going to finish the game. And everybody get the role that the team needs. And it was so good to see how Jul, that didn't score any point in a final, score as he used to do it for years and years. It was good to know that he was so good at mentality to do this in the right moment. Same like Chacho, that was playing the final very good until the end, or same like Rudy, that was defending amazing in the zone. Of course, the other players, without Tavares, without Sonia, without Eli and Diaye, that starts the game and was not important during the season, but at the end, it was an amazing job. Or the others, Fabian Coser, that was at the end of the, or even Adam Hanga, or Nigel William Goss, all of them were important. And especially all of them understood which was the role at the end of the EuroLeague.
Coach, we actually want to move on now to a segment on the show that we call Start, Sub, or Sit. And so what we'll do is we'll give you three different options around a topic, ask you to start one of them, sub one of them, and sit one of them. And then we'll discuss your answer from there. So, Coach, this question has to do with when a player is not buying in to some part of your team, which one of these three options is the most damaging to your team? So your start here would be, this is the most damaging option when a player doesn't buy into certain parts of your team. Start, sub, or sit. Option one is when they don't buy into their other teammates. So they don't trust or get along with their other teammates. Option two is they don't buy into their own role on the team. Or option three is they don't buy into the coach or the coaching staff, whatever it is that the dynamics between the coach and the player.
Oh, I think the first one is the worst, for sure, when they don't buy into the teammates. In my opinion, this is not something easy to solve, but of course, I like a lot to talk with the players. I like to be very close to them. So I will try to talk with him. I will try to solve it, trying to understand why the situation came. And I will try to make him to understand that probably doing this or having another different attitude, this can be solved. In my opinion, it's very important to talk with them. It's very important to never lie them, to be always honest with them and try to talk, because for me, it's very important the chemistry of a team to get good results. And if there is no good chemistry, never could be good results.
Was that different for you this year, or more difficult as a head coach as opposed to the years when you were an assistant and you're able to maybe have a closer relationship? Did that change at all for you as a head coach?
For me, I got 8 years being assistant coach of Pablo Laso in Real Madrid. And so most of the players know me very well. I was very close to them. They know how I work. They know which is my behavior with them. And of course, right now, everything changed because I got to make decisions. It's not the same to be assistant, where you're going to give advices to the head coach. Then when you are the head coach, you got to make decisions. And of course, nobody is going to be, I can't have all the people happy with me because I have to make decisions. And sometimes it's not good for the people that play less or play in a different role that they want to play or this kind of things. For me, it was very easy to this change of job. Everybody can be coach, but it's not the same to be assistant and to be head coach. The responsibility is so big, and especially in a club like Real Madrid, that when you are head coach, all the guns are pointing you because you are responsible right now. And for me, it was very easy because I got very good people on the team, people that made me to be this change to make it easy. They know me before and I know them before. I know that sometimes I have to treat them. And for me, it's very important as a coach in Real Madrid to don't be a problem. The coach, in my opinion, in Real Madrid, get to understand that there are so good players and so many stars that you can't be a star. I think that I can't be a star. I have to not to high profile. I have to do my job and try to solve them their problems instead of creating problems. Try to solve them too many situations with my knowledge or with my attitude or my behavior. This is what I think, that in Real Madrid you can be a star like maybe other coach in other places. Real Madrid got too many stars and the main role is for the players, not for the coach.
You mentioned the importance that you place on yourself to build relationships with your players. I would like to ask how you think about building team chemistry and more so the relationship player to player, whether it's on the court or off the court, how you build team chemistry.
For me, the most important thing is to be honest with them. I have to tell them my thoughts, what I think about them, what are my expectations from them, which is going to be the role. Of course, during a season, everything can change, but I can't lie them. I can tell them, hey, you are going to be the star of this team, and then suddenly he is not playing. No, I got to be honest. I got to play and to practice day by day and tell them that think only in tomorrow, today and tomorrow, no more, because this is so long. In my opinion, the most important thing is to show with example that you are the first one that is working there every day and that you are not going to lie them, you are not going to fail them, and try to solve the problems that is going to be during the way. There will be too many problems and probably are some problems that are personal problems that, of course, you got to be close to them in order to be able to be available to solve it too. But for me, it's important the diary work, you know what I mean? Day by day is very important and they have to understand, you have to show that you are good all the season, not only one day. The first 2 months is perfect. Sometimes I remember too many players that came towards one team and the first 2 months were amazing. And in the important moments when there are problems and really they have to be the first that are trying to solve it, they disappear. And this is something that I don't want to do. In the bad moments, I got to be there. I got to be the first one. And this is the way I think that you have to lead something. Not too many words, but showing with your attitude that you are going to be there ready to help my teammates in the moment that they need to be helped.
A quick thank you to our newest partner here at Slapping Glass, one of the best tech companies in the world of sports, Huddle. As many of you know, Huddle extends an array of useful products to coaches, from their auto-tracking camera, Huddle Focus, live streaming tool, Huddle TV, wearable athlete performance tracker, Wemu, and their newest offering, Huddle Instat, an all-in-one data powerhouse platform that combines advanced tagging with a global film library. For more information on all that's offered with Huddle Instat, visit huddle.com/slappingglass today. Thanks to Huddle for the support. And now back to our conversation.
All right, Coach, thank you for your answer there. Moving on to our next start sub sit, we're going to go back on the court onto the defensive end. And we're going to ask about your drop defense and give you 3 actions your opponents would run against you. And which one was the most concerning or troubling to solve when you were dropping Tavares at the rim? So start, sub, or sit. Option 1, the short roll catches and opponents playing through the short roll. Option 2 is opponents playing through the pop. Or option 3 is just knowing that they had a penetrator who was going to constantly attack the rim and just get on the rim and go after Tavares.
Of course, the pop is the worst for us. And especially if this player that can pop can put it on the floor too. We got too many problems with Smailagić with Partizan because he can shoot from three and he can put it on the floor. And sometimes even with Barcelona, with Sanli, we got too many problems with he pops against us or against Valencia with Dublevic. These kind of players for us create a lot of problems because Tavares is a special guy that he needs to be comfortable in his comfort zone. And we, of course, work on some different situations to solve with the team defense this option. I don't want to tell you now, but I can tell you, but this is what the worst situation for our defense when we drop Tavares.
When the big man who popped could put it on the floor and dribble, why was that even more troubling? What were they doing with the dribble that then caused, I'm sure, the next action to be even harder for you guys to defend?
It depends because on the scouting, we can to heavy to go to close out and stop the right hand, or we can consider to allow him to shoot the first one, don't go too far in order to see if he's in a good moment to shoot or not. If he scored the first one, this can make us hesitate. It depends. Not always is the same. Too many times we use the side with the perimeter players to help Tavares once he needs to go out and we help and recover from the side, or if the big guy is able to put the ball on the floor, we try to collapse a lot in this moment because probably he's not so good passer. But we got in front of many good players that can pass the ball to. Ante Tomic is very good on the short roll, but he's not so good on shooting threes. He can score threes, but he is not so consistent. But he's very good on a pass. And on Tomic, we don't used to help too much with the outside players. In a short roll, we try to recover with Tavares and inside, and we allowed him sometimes to shoot from a high post, but we don't allow him to pass because he's so good passer, but we prefer to play one-on-one against Tavares from a high post. So it depends. Not always the same.
On the short roll, if you do want to take it away, what are the ways? Is it you'll send a bump or you'll have Tavares position himself? How will you try to take away the short roll if you want to take away, let's say, the pass and not even allow it to get to the short roll?
We always bump from the weak side. And it depends on the man who is driving in the pick and roll because we drop back more or less Tavares. And the reaction to defend the pop, the short roll, is not the same. And it depends on if the man who is driving the pick and roll is a good shooter or if he's more a penetrator. We make Tavares to retreat more. We want to defend this pick and roll situation not only with Tavares and the man who is involved on the pick and roll. We use a lot of corners. We don't want to defend the corners flat. We used to keep very high the corners and in diagonal, watching the man who is in the corner and watching the ball, but never flat. And we used to lift it because this way, I think that we reduce a lot the space of the pick and roll action. And of course, we got to keep a very important activity with the other three guys that are not involved on the pick and roll. My opinion, this is the key point. Not only the two men that are involved on it, the activity of the other three is very important. And of course, we need to help and recover to bump and to reduce this distance between the bump and the man that you leave to bump is very important to prevent this situation.
If a team is popping on an empty pick and roll, so there's no one in the corner, how you think about solving a good pick and pop guy where there's just a two in the pick and roll, but there's no one there to really help from the corner?
This is another problem for us. We will try to make it good, but this is another problem for us because sometimes we decide to send to the side instead of allowed the big guy to pop to the side. Sometimes we decide to go under. It depends on the man who is driving. For us, it's not easy to defend this situation with a big guy so big like Tavares.
Coach, you're off the start, sub, or sit hot seat. Thanks for playing that game with us. We enjoyed your answers. Coach, we got one last question before we close the show. But before we do, once again, congratulations on a great last season. And we really appreciate you coming on the show today. This was really fun for us. So thank you.
Oh, it was my pleasure to be with you. I heard about you a lot, and I hope that my answers were good. My English is not so good, but I hope that the answers were useful for somebody, and thank you for allowing me to go into your program.
Thank you, Coach. And it was terrific. So thank you very much. Coaches are going to love this. Coach, our last question for you that we ask all the guests is, what's the best investment that you've made in your career as a coach?
Of course, the passion. This is not an investment. When I was a kid, I went to too many places around Spain and around the world to watch practices of other coaches, to be close to other coaches, not famous coaches, but share too many ideas, to go to a bar with a beer in the middle of the table and to draw some diagrams, to learn too many things of other coaches and teach them all the things that they can learn from me. And of course, the education that I received from my parents, they make me patient. They make me person that I think that is important to be good for your teammates and for the people that is surrounding you. And in a game like basketball, in which you have to share too many things with family that is your team, is very important to be ready to share too many moments, good and bad moments, with all the people that got your same goal.
All right, Pat, boy, that was enjoyable. You and I were just talking a little bit right before hopping on this, just about, we did a ton of research before this podcast and going back through the EuroLeague semifinals, finals, the series before when they decided to go to the zone. And, you know, we watched a lot of film and talked a lot about it ourselves. And that was really fun to just get an inside look and have an inside conversation. And just, I think you and I both walked away from this with a ton of even more respect for Coach Mateo, just his willingness to share and discuss everything. So really enjoyable conversation.
Definitely. I'm with you. Yeah. Huge respect to him for, of course, winning EuroLeague, but for his willingness to come on and share with us and be so open. And it's been a summer of zone for us with Coach De Rafael and looking at different 3-2 monster zones and our project we did with Coach Gallo and the Miami Heat. So we're really looking forward to this and just getting into like why zones are still such a great adjustment, and enjoyed the conversation around just the whole adjustment. And again, his thoroughness of why they needed to do it. And he was honest in saying it wasn't so much what, I mean, they were down 0-2, so they needed to change, but it was more so how he needs to protect his team in this moment, with some suspensions, some injuries. And I thought it was really cool just going into how they're trying to protect Tavares. And I know we'll get into it, just the whole conversation about saving Sergio Llull, Sergio Rodriguez, and Rudy Fernandez, that he needed to save those guys so they could finish the games and give them the best chances to win. So it was cool just kind of getting inside his mind in terms of why they made this adjustment. Like he said, you know, they make maybe the first couple threes, it's a bad adjustment and they're out of it, but it worked well. The team Partizan in this case started to miss, and they rode it for 5 straight wins into the EuroLeague championship. So it was a really cool conversation. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I had a ton of fun too. And I think you and I were just talking real fast before hopping on. Just, we enjoyed hearing how he thought about things and sort of his coaching demeanor. And I think we'll get into this a little bit more later when we talk about some of his views on just not being a star as a coach and all that. I thought that was really great. I won't jump ahead, but before heading into this conversation, I was really interested and wanted to ask him about the buy-in process with the staff and the team before making this major overhaul to go into the zone, you know, in game 3, and then keeping it in a major, major way all the way through, like you mentioned, in the championship. And if that was easy or difficult, or how that whole thing went, because anytime you stand in front of a team and say, hey, we're going to make this pretty big change, it can go either way. Obviously, he had the players that were ready to buy in, and some of it was also the fact that they had injuries and suspensions and stuff, and it was leading them towards this zone. But then he mentioned there wasn't a lot of practice time. There wasn't a lot of time to just sit around and work on it for 2 or 3 weeks. Like, they had to just put it in and apply some concepts and then go with it. And then it's amazing to us, just like in what he mentioned too, like, it can create so much hesitancy in the opponent, especially in these big games where teams are used to running their offense, their flow, their pick and roll, all that stuff. And all of a sudden, you're just a little bit more hesitant with shots and where they're coming from. And like, I'll kick it back to you in a second, because he talked about bumping versus not bumping. And it's really an interesting thing to talk about, especially because now we know the ending and we know it worked. You know, I mean, like you mentioned, if they were to come down and banged home 2 threes and they got out of it, then, you know, different story, but they didn't and it worked. And so, yeah, really interesting.
I was surprised too. He mentioned they never worked on it until I think the circumstances dictated that they try this zone. We were for sure thinking, of course, I would imagine that at some point maybe had it in their back pocket or had discussed it, but surprising that it really wasn't something he was even thinking about beginning of the year that they'd run. Of course, he said they had some alternative defenses in mind.
Well, it reminded me a little bit of when we had Coach Sergio Scariolo on with the triangle two or the box of one, and basically don't practice it too much because your players will lose confidence in it. And the element of surprise, it'll be better in the game type of thing. So maybe that's the trick, is just don't practice your zone defense.
Do less. Yeah. No. I think my last point too, and we can start to move into some start, sub, sit, it really showed how well he knew his team. And especially with, like I mentioned, trying to save Lul, Rodriguez, and Rudy for the late game and the whole buy-in conversation we had.
Yeah.
That really came across in this instant, this situation of deciding to go zone and the benefits that it would provide his team given the circumstances. So yeah, I was really impressed with just his having a pulse on his team and what they needed.
100%. Yeah. And it does bleed right into the star sub sit, which I think we'll just hop then right into that first one, which was the player that's not buying into some part of your deal, whether it's teammates, their role, or the coaches. And you and I were discussing this question for a decent amount of time, trying to come up with how to ask it, because as we're recording this, still kind of early preseason and getting to know your team, getting to know roles, you're putting all that stuff in. And as he mentioned, it's tough when someone just doesn't want to buy into some part of that whole process. And you've had players that they love their teammates, but they don't love their role and what the coaches are doing. So going back to Owen Eastwood, creates cliques and they do their own stuff within it. I think talking through his answer, it was great hearing, what was most difficult for him, which was he started the teammates, but what it did lead nicely into is just his thoughts on coaching, really, and his place within a team. And he mentioned at Real Madrid, there's enough stars and that he doesn't need to be a problem. And I think he just really got a sense there of how he views coaching and his role and what ultimately is the most helpful for a team from his standpoint. And I just thought that was a really cool moment to hear him talk about that.
Absolutely. I wrote down solve rather than create problems is what he felt his role was, and to not really ever shine above anyone else. I'm with you. I thought I mentioned it to you before we came on here that I thought this part of the conversation, it's clear like this is what he hangs his hat on as a coach and really prides himself on, because I thought he spoke obviously really well about it. And I thought he spoke with a lot of passion behind it. I really appreciated his thoughts. And I like the part too, when he mentioned, I think we've all seen it, or players that come in the first 2 months, they're great, but then the troubles hit, the ebbs and flows of a season, and then they're nowhere to be found. And so, him saying he always wants to be the coach who's leading in these moments, he's going to provide solutions, and that actions over his words is what he really valued in these moments of critical time or not buying in or losing streaks.
Glad you brought that back up, because I'd written that down too about the first 2 months of the season, or even just the college level, from even the first 2 weeks to a month of the season, where you've got guys that come in, whether transfers or new players or whatever, and they look great and they got a lot of energy, but then something hits, some sort of adversity, whatever it is, or even if they're good players, just seasons are long and it can be a lot. And I think that's why coaches, we love veterans so much, because there's a track record of how they act throughout a season. And speaking, from the college level, I know like the transfer portal or older players, freshmen are hard because you don't know how they're going to react midway through a season, or new players to your program, you just don't have that. And what he said is he's had that with these guys for a long time, as he was an assistant first, then going to the head coach. And so he had the relationship. He knew how they would act. And then flipping back to the first bucket, he had the trust and the cachet and all that built up with them, so that when he went to them to say, hey, we're going to zone now, we're going to go to Serbia and we're going to zone and we're going to win, and they're like, yeah, they were bought in, they're ready to do it. I mean, I think that's where you see how he is as a coach, allowed him to make that big decision and for them to buy in and be comfortable as a team to try it.
And even explaining to the guys the roles. I keep referencing he wanted his vets to finish the game, but on the other side of the coin, it's the young guys, the hungry guys, telling them the importance of their role. But their role is, you got to get us to these moments so we can get our veterans in to close the game. And that's always not easy, to sacrifice the crunch time. And these guys would get heavy minutes. And then the old veterans they were saving were getting lesser minutes, but playing the most important part of the game. And I think that's 100% not easy to do, and a very delicate dance. And he did it phenomenal.
Go back to the Owen Eastwood conversation. We were talking about difference between lions and wolves and sheep.
Yeah.
And he obviously knew, like, especially late game, that those three veterans were the lions. They know how to close. They know how to win games. They know how to hit big shots. And not saying that the younger guys aren't lions, or people don't know what the heck I'm talking about, can go back and listen. But it made sense. Actually, I think about it a lot now, is those guys knew how to win, but those other guys were still super important to helping get the team to that point where the Lions could take over and win.
I think where this question came about is when we were thinking about it, people are starting their preseasons or thinking about their preseasons. And I do think the preseason is a safe time, let's say. You're not losing games. Everyone feels good about yourself. Everyone's excited. So again, to reference back, the first 2 months is easy. And I think this is where we wanted to have this conversation. How you use these first 2 months to build buy-in, like we said, put deposits in the bank, knowing that when the times are going to get tough, you can then start to demand. You can start to maybe make a couple withdrawals, get on players, and not everyone's going to be happy. So again, just as we kind of were thinking of this question, I think that's where it was rooted in. You know, we knew in our research that Chus Mateo does a phenomenal job at building relationships and creating an atmosphere where everyone is happy to be at and is glad to be there.
And they're stars too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's Real Madrid.
These guys are best players in the world.
Yeah, it's not just some small town club by any means.
For sure. Well, moving on to the other one, which I know you were chomping at the bit to ask because of how much film watched on Tavares and his drop coverage and how good he is. And so I'll kick it back to you on your takeaways on the drop defense.
As he mentioned why they played zone, it was to protect them. So I think it was fun to ask, when you're not going to play zone and you are in man, they're the ones, how are you trying to protect them against these three different attacks, the short roll, the pop, or just guards who are going to go after them for either fouls or the big man to clean up on offensive rebounds? Everything was interesting because I'm super curious about it. I mean, Tavares is such an elite defender, and he mentioned just the pop, and he mentioned then a pop and a guy who can really dribble. Thought we were going to turn it into a pop to DHO, long DHO conversation.
Yeah, I was hoping, yeah. But it's okay.
It didn't get there, but we understand the problem it can cause. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, I appreciate all of his thoughts there. And I like too, when we got into the defending the short roll conversation, and he just started to get into the most important thing, the activity of the three players outside of schematics, just being active. But he did mention having corners, not getting flat on the corners, lifting up high and just shrinking the court, you know, make it look like there is no, or take away any short roll window there may be to protect Tavares.
What I think you and I find really interesting about watching film of Tavares is flipping it to the offensive side, because when you have someone that is an elite defender as Tavares, it forces the opponents to run the best possible thing they can think of to take advantage of that. You're seeing opponents, whatever they run against Tavares in that drop, they've thought a ton as a staff on the best way to attack him. So you're seeing the best tactics because he's the best defender in that drop and he's such a problem. It forces the opponent to adjust. And I always like looking at and talking about, okay, where on the floor are they running the pick and roll? What's the angle? What are they doing after a pop, short roll, whatever? And then is it an empty side? All those things we kind of got into. And I just think, as a very nerdy in the weeds discussion, it's just interesting because obviously if it works against Tavares, then it'll probably be successful against someone that's not quite as good as Tavares in the drop. And so it gives you hints on the offensive side too of what's hard to guard.
I like too the little cat and mouse game he mentioned, when maybe it is a big who can pop and shoot, and that they won't send Tavares on the first one and see if he makes it or not. And if he misses, maybe we can keep trying, you know, get away with it a little bit longer and make our lives easier, rather than just immediately start going to whatever it's, however you're rotating or making Tavares run closeouts when he hasn't necessarily proven it that game. Or, you know, I liked your question going back to locations when it was an empty side ball screen. And of course they can ice it, but just sometimes maybe we'll just go under and see if the guard's willing to shoot it.
Really good stuff. Any misses on your end or stuff that we wish would have gone a little deeper on?
Perhaps it would have been nice, maybe it starts up Sid, as I mean, I'm happy where all the conversations ended up, but to maybe hit on offensive side of the ball is all pretty defensive heavy, but I think rightfully so.
No, I agree. I would just add, we touched a little bit on it, but the late game stuff and closing games and what it is about great players. And, you know, as we said, the Lions, not, he didn't, but as I'm saying it here, more into that a little bit, I think, whether it's with another coach, maybe we go deeper on, but like great veteran players late game, and I think how that affects your coaching, the trust that you have in them, whether it's play calling, whether it's just all the things that can happen late game. And I think that's an interesting conversation. And he brought it up about how good they were, and then obviously the great stuff about saving them, but always interesting, the late game stuff, especially with really good players.
I agree. The conversation we're looking for is that I think there are a lot of intangibles. I mean, obviously you play the better skilled players and let their skill take over. But I think there is an intangible side of it that plays a heavy role in it. And I think in our conversation with Owen Eastwood, just the fearlessness or the willingness to take that shot or make that player make the pass is not innate in everyone. It's not something players are willing to risk all the time.
Yeah, because we've had a bunch of conversations, obviously, late game coaching and decisions and all that, which is also interesting, but like players and what they do, I think would be maybe something for the future.
And just Mateo talked about with, especially I think he mentioned Lula and Rudy Fernandez, just their competitive edge, I think is something that he really valued out there in the late game moments. And just knowing that those guys are competitors and they're going to push their teammates to compete, which sometimes I think we take for granted, but it isn't always the case in late game moments.
For sure. So, well, we again thank Coach Mateo for his time and all those thoughts and wish him the best of luck this year. And Pat, if there's nothing else, we'll start wrapping this up.
Sounds good.
Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Please make sure to visit slappingglass.com for more information on the free newsletter, Slapping Glass Plus, and much more. Have a great week coaching, and we'll see you next time on Slapping Glass.
Do we have a name yet for this thing? I have like slapping backboard.
Slapping glass.
Slapping glass. That's kind of funny.
I like that. Good. Let's roll. Slapping glass.